Well, I know we've come off a stressful holiday season. There's been a lot of draining activity. I wanted to give you a quiz today. It's called the world's easiest quiz. And I wanted to make it easy for you so that you, you know, you wouldn't have to struggle hard through this. So let's see how you guys do with this. The first question is, how long did the Hundred Years War last? Anybody got an idea on that?
100 years.
Actually, 116 years. Who knew that? Wow, very good. From 1337 to 1453. Maybe this is not going to be such a simple quiz after all. Number two, which country makes Panama hats?
Panama.
That's actually Ecuador makes Panama hats. So now, I don't know, those who are in the music industry realize that, or industry, the music scene, know that sometimes the string instruments, the strings are made from catgut, right? So from what animal do we get catgut violin strings?
Cats.
Horses.
Sheep and horses, but not cats. Somebody in here is trying to show us off. Yeah. Okay, in what month do Russians celebrate the October Revolution?
November.
Very big event.
I think it's cool.
Very big. Well, it's not October, it's in November, because the Russian calendar is 13 days behind ours. What is a camel's hair brush made of? You know what not to
horse hair,
right? Yeah, no, it's squirrel fur is what camel hair brushes are made of. The Canary Islands in the Pacific are named for what animal?
A bird.
You're trying to catch me off guard there, but yeah, okay. Actually, the Latin name for the islands, though, was Insularia Canaria, which means island of the dogs. So Canary Islands was named after dogs. What was King the VI's first name?
King.
George.
Not George. It wasn't King either, no. It was Albert. When he came to the throne in 1936, he respected the wishes of Queen Elizabeth's mother, who was Queen Victoria, that no future king would ever again be called Albert. What color is a purple finch? That should be easy. It's not blue. It is distinctively red. Red, not lavender either, no. Where are Chinese gooseberries found?
On
gooseberry plants is where they're found. Yes, that's true. But we would find them in the country of New Zealand, actually. Chinese gooseberries come from New Zealand. And number 10, how long did the 30 Years War last?
30 years.
30 years, of course, from 1618 to 1648. So now you know the world's easiest quiz. I imagine most of you don't feel quite so smart as you did before you walked in, right? We're starting a new series today in a book traditionally written by the wisest man who ever lived. It's a story of Solomon's search to find fulfillment in the world. It's like a football game I watched recently where one guy ran the ball and was tackled. The ball came loose very close to the 5-yard line. One of the other team's players scooped it up and ran like crazy 95 yards for the touchdown. He was going crazy in the end zone, jumping up and down until he realized none of his teammates were celebrating. Turns out, the guy who fumbled the ball, the ref had ruled, touched the ground first. And just when he thought he had success, he found out it didn't even count. As you look around, you'll find people that are like that. They finally got their dream, only to find out that it doesn't count for fulfillment. It doesn't count for satisfaction in their lives. One person said, life is like an exercise bike. You get on one, and then you go nowhere. In fact, it's purposely designed to go nowhere. The point is not to get somewhere. The point is to expend as much energy as possible for as long as possible while you are going nowhere. Every time you step off the treadmill, you step off the exercise bike, you're in the same exact place where you began. Someone else said it like this: many people spend their whole life climbing the ladder of success, only to find out at the other end that it's leaning against the totally wrong wall. So we're in a series called, by the book name, Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes, confused in life, but confident in God. Now, a lot of people don't like reading Ecclesiastes. Mm-hmm. A lot of pastors don't like preaching from Ecclesiastes. It's a very down book. It's a very negative, impacting book. And so we need to see what we're going to find out in here. But Ecclesiastes is home to some of our best-known proverbs. Things like, there's nothing new under the sun, came from this book. He makes everything beautiful in its time, came from this book. The race is not to the swift, came from this book. And in it, Solomon addresses some of life's biggest questions. How can we really matter? Where can we find true intimacy? Can we find true intimacy? What is a healthy balance in life? Why are we here? Can we understand why things happen the way they do? Does life have meaning? Quite frankly, it is the book in the Bible for those who want to think deeply about life. Ecclesiastes was written for everyone who has sincere questions about life and the very nature of God. Instead of calling this book Ecclesiastes, we could call it Solomon's Search for Meaning. Or we could call it George's Search, or Matthew's Search, or Stephen's Search for Meaning. All of us are writing the story of our own search for fulfillment in life. 5-year-old boy once came to his mother and asked, Mom, where did I come from? Well, the mother took a very deep breath because she had dreaded the moment when he would ask that question. But she was determined to answer it truthfully, so she started explaining in explicit detail the whole reproductive system, conception for everything. About 20 minutes into it, totally wide-eyed, he said, Wow, Jimmy just said he came from New York. Where did we all come from? Where are we going? What is life all about anyway? Now, here's an interesting fact that I hope you guys will take recognition of. If you read 2 chapters of Ecclesiastes in a day, you can read through the whole book in a week. So imagine how prepared you'll be for our series as we're going through. If you spend your week immersed in his word that we're studying together week after week here. A little hint, hint. See, Ecclesiastes was written late in Solomon's life. Early in life, he wrote 2 other books. Do you know what those are? His name is Solomon. Song of Solomon. There's a good one. Okay. And one more. Proverbs. In his early life, he wrote Song of Solomon. In his midlife, he wrote Proverbs. And near the end, he wrote this book we're studying today, Ecclesiastes. And in it, he laments that in his search for meaning in life, he found none. Ecclesiastes 1:1. These are the words of the teacher, King David's son, who ruled in Jerusalem. Now, the Hebrew word for teacher means the one who gathers together an assembly of people. In fact, the book Ecclesiastes comes from the word that means that we get church, the Greek word ecclesia, Ecclesiastes. And this word is used 7 times in the Old Testament, and all of them right here in the book of Ecclesiastes. This teacher, we don't know by name, it's not identified who he is, but we do know that he identified as the son of David and king in Jerusalem. That fits Solomon. The teacher repeatedly draws on his wisdom throughout Ecclesiastes. That too applies to Solomon. Solomon, Jesus said, was the wisest man who ever had lived and who ever will live. And it says that the teacher will end up describing this book, detailing his dabbling in very unwise decisions, unwise choices, and unwise things. And as we know Solomon's life, that's exactly where we see poor Solomon go through. In 1 Kings chapter 3, we see Solomon, who inherited the throne from his father David. He said, God asked him what he wanted as he comes to rule the nation. And he asked God for just one thing, wisdom, to help him rule. And God gives it to him, plus so much more. At the beginning of his reign, Solomon puts the practice of wisdom that God gave him. Further, Solomon then used this wisdom again, as we saw, to write 3 books within the Bible. Solomon achieved the highest position a person could back then. He was king. In fact, he was king over the largest land group in the world. He experienced growing in wisdom and stature and knowledge. For 40 years, Solomon reigned as the king over Israel. As one of the most powerful kings on the earth, Israel reached its peak under his rule and increased both in territory and power. History tells us that the Queen of Sheba traveled 1,500 miles just to see his kingdom. He built palaces and ships and greenhouses and gardens, and perhaps most impressive of all, he built the temple in Jerusalem. Now, King Solomon, if anyone, should have known the answers to our question. I mean, Solomon had it all. He had money, more money than he could possibly spend. He had possessions, more things than he could possibly enjoy. He had wives, more than he could possibly please. He even had wisdom far greater than anyone else in his day. He had it all, yet he really didn't have a grasp on the purpose of life. That was 1 Kings 3, but if we look at his life in 1 Kings chapter 11, first six verses, King Solomon, however, loved many foreign women besides Pharaoh's daughter, Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, and Hittites. They were from nations about which the Lord had told the Israelites, you must not intermarry with them because they will surely turn your heart after their gods. Nevertheless, Solomon held fast to them in love. He had 700 wives of royal birth and 300 concubines, and his wives led him astray. As Solomon grew old, his wives turned his hearts after other gods, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord his God as the heart of David his father had been. He followed Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. And so Solomon did evil in the eyes of the Lord. He did not follow the Lord completely as David his father had done. And as we continue reading this morning, the first chapter of Ecclesiastes together, we'll see some of the negative results of this search, this fruitless search he went on. Ecclesiastes 1:2 can be considered the key verse of this entire book. Everything is meaningless, said the teacher, completely meaningless. In fact, you'll find that it's the number one word found in the book of Ecclesiastes, is meaningless. In fact, if you read here in the very second verse of the book, we see this. Look at the verse we see, what it reads in Ecclesiastes 12:8, the last chapter of the book. It says, everything is meaningless, says the teacher, completely meaningless. So it opens and closes with, life is meaningless. The word translated meaningless in its primary mean a breath or a vapor. The word meaningless literally means something which vanishes. Is only here for a time. You see it, but in a moment it's gone. It's nothing. You go get it and it vanishes. It's not there. It's emptiness, complete emptiness. And the word again occurs 35 times in this book of Ecclesiastes. The teacher's not the only one in the Bible to say things like this, though. 1 Peter 1:24, all men are like grass, and all their glory is like flowers of the field. The grass withers and the flowers fail. James 4:14, why don't you know what will happen tomorrow? Or you don't know, I should say, what will happen tomorrow? What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Solomon uses a superlative to drive it home, which is the repetition of the word meaningless, or hebel. He says, everything is hebel, completely hebel, meaning there's nothing more empty or futile than life. Now, aren't you glad you came to church today? What a positive message we're going through, right? But don't get too depressed by this little nugget of wisdom. Solomon provides context to this depressing statement in the next two verses, Ecclesiastes 1, verse 3. What do people get for all their hard work under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth never changes. The sun rises and the sun sets and then hurries around to rise again. Now that phrase, under the sun, gives us a clue to what he's talking about. It means that the natural world, the world we find ourselves living in. The teacher here primarily is concerned in the things that happen to here on earth. He does not bother himself in the discussion with what happens above the sun, in the heavens. He's concerned about events in life from a human perspective. What we will discover as we continue reading is that a life which invests in things that are under the sun is a life that is meaningless. Totally empty. It's a life that does not profit the individual. You know, when I was a young man, my parents had just divorced, and I joined, it was encouragement that I would join the boys' club. And within the first year, I was the top air rifle shooter. I loved this trophy. I was so proud of this trophy. So proud I still have it today. Yeah. Right? Outstanding air rifle. I didn't know I was an air rifle. But anyway, it was an outstanding shooter. I was the number one shooter. I was so proud. This trophy meant everything to me. But you know what? I don't remember any of that time anymore. And this trophy one day will end up in the dump. It is not worth what the energies I put into it. The very thing you dedicate your life to, whether it's your sport or your vocation or your budget or your retirement or your reputation, you are going to die, and it's all going to go to the dump, and the world's going to keep on turning. The sun's going to continue to rise and set. The rivers are going to keep going into the ocean. The world is going to keep turning and just not care. And so if there is no God, if there's no future reward or punishment, if there's no heaven or hell, then what difference does it all make? We are truly working in vain. Ecclesiastes goes on. The wind blows south and then turns north. Around and around it goes, blowing in circles. Rivers run into the sea, but the sea never fills up. Then the water returns again to the river and flows out again to the sea. Constant cycles. Same thing. But we notice something here I want to point out to you as an aside. The writer of Ecclesiastes presents two scientific principles that really were totally unknown at the time that he was writing this. The cycles of the air, the cycles of water. In 1940, weather balloons first found that there was a basic pattern to our air circulation in the atmosphere above. 1520, hundreds of years after this, if not a couple thousand actually, the oceans were believed to spill over the end of the earth because the earth was flat at that time, right? We had not yet realized that we believed that the earth was now round. And then it was in 1770 that it was discovered, the idea of evaporation. The water goes up into the clouds, it comes back down again, enters the river, goes to the oceans, comes back up, and does the cycle. The Bible is talking about these things long before they happen, which gives further evidence for the divine authorship of this book. But we move on to verse 8. Everything is wearisome beyond description. No matter how much we see, we're never satisfied. No matter how much we hear, we're not content. This is our society today. That's exactly how it's described, right? I mean, if you think about it, you put something in a microwave, if it's more than 30 seconds, you're mad, right? We want instant gratification. Things that we took as granted for a while. Well, try this, for instance. We have gone from 10-inch black and white TVs with tubes. How many of you remember picture tubes? They go down to Thrifties and
the big one, yes, all of those.
Oval things, right? I just dated myself, I believe. But anyway, we went from 10-inch black and white TVs to giant screens, high fidelity, stereophonic surround sound, but we're still not content as a people, are we? Put a 150-channel remote control in our hands, and we will still be restless.
It's certainly nothing to watch.
Because the things of life don't really satisfy unless you have a purpose. Going on in verse 9, history merely repeats itself. It's all been done before. Nothing under the sun is truly new. Sometimes people say, well, here's something new, but actually it is old. Nothing is ever truly new. We don't remember what happened in the past, and in future generations, no one will remember what we are doing now. What a positive thought that is. You know, if you went to college, you probably attended classes in a building that was named for some person, right? Did you know who that person was? Why that person's name is on the building? Probably not. You didn't care, right? It was named after someone who did something before you got there, was all ancient history to you, and you were only concerned about the here and now. And so these building names don't mean a thing to us. I'll show you another perfect clue of this. We all know Abraham Lincoln. Who was Abraham Lincoln's first vice president? Don't know him, do we? Hannibal Hamlin. He didn't keep going. Apparently, because we've never heard again of Hannibal Hamlin. How about his Secretary of State? A more well-known, common name, but William Seward. And we've had things like Seward's Folly, if you're a history buff and like that. But we don't know these people because we weren't around with them, and their memory is gone. Great civilizations have come and gone, yet now their greatness is just a fleeting memory, a line in a history book somewhere. Now, we want to argue, yeah, but look at all the progress we've made. We've put a man on the moon. We have computers now that do amazing things. But the problem is that we're still the same. We're still greedy, selfish, prideful people. We wrestle with the same issues and problems, just maybe a little more sophisticated in style. But there really is nothing new under the sun. Verse 12, I, the teacher, was king of Israel, and I lived in Jerusalem. I devoted myself to search for understanding and to explore by wisdom everything being done under the heaven. I soon discovered that God has dealt a tragic existence to the human race. I observed everything going on under the sun, and really, it is all meaningless, like chasing the wind. His ambition was to find if worldly ways could provide any answers to life, and he found only a life centered in God gives us any answers. We think of a little kid chasing bubbles, right? Or I know that we have 2 acres, and so every now and then those little dirt cyclones, you know, they're only rise up maybe 20 feet in the air. But I watched my kids when they were smaller, much smaller, but they would try to chase those things and catch them, and they never were able to, right? But that's how we are in life. We try to go reach for something, and we grab it, and it's not even there anymore. Basically, Solomon's saying, I've seen all that goes on in this world, how men strive to be satisfied without God being at the center of their lives, and I have found it is like trying to catch the wind. They can pretend they're happy, but it is all empty. It's all meaningless. Outside of God, everything is meaningless. Verse 15, what is wrong cannot be made right. What is missing cannot be recovered. The world is fundamentally flawed, and you and I, or the government, or education, or religion cannot fix this. The evil we see in this world, and we see on the news channels 24 hours, 7 days a week, it will not be fixed by anything that this world can offer. Apart from God, that which is crooked cannot be straightened. That which is shattered cannot be put back together. That which is torn cannot be mended. That which is lacking cannot be made full. Only God has the power to completely fix things. No matter how many answers we can come up with, we can't fix what's fundamentally wrong. Wisdom helps us to understand the world, but not how to control it. I like how one author put it, we're so smart in America, we can walk on the moon, but it's also not safe to walk in the park. Mm-hmm. Verse 16, I said to myself, look, I am wiser than any of the kings who ruled in Jerusalem before me. I have greater wisdom and knowledge than any of them. So I set out to learn everything from wisdom to madness and folly. But I learned firsthand that pursuing all this is like chasing the wind. Now, his statement about having more wisdom than any other kings before him may sound like bad boasting, but really it was a statement of fact. He was wiser than all the kings that went before him. Not only was Solomon granted great wisdom from God, but he had personal experience and opportunity to study from a vast amount of resources. Just knowing wisdom is no end in itself. What good is all this understanding without God? Without him, I'm just a fool. I can have a wall full of diplomas behind me in my office, right? But without God, all that makes me is an educated fool. I'm still a fool. Verse 18, the last verse in our chapter. The greater my wisdom, the greater my grief. To increase knowledge only increases sorrow. If you can remember back to in a more innocent age, when you were younger, some of us may have to go way back to find that innocent age, but when you can remember back, but you know, my favorite time of all was when I was in second or third grade. Life was great. I liked a girl. She liked me. I think so, because we passed notes about it. We never told each other. And I didn't have to worry about bills. I didn't have to worry about paychecks. I didn't have to worry about any of the stuff that was going on. I didn't even pay attention to the screen and see what was going on in the world. I was in a very comfortable bubble. My innocence, however, soon went away. Soon came divorce from my parents. My family was torn apart. And then as I grew older, I started being aware of more of the worldly things and discovering that, like Solomon, life is empty. Ignorance truly is bliss. Well, this has been a fun and uplifting study, hasn't it? Yeah. If one can't find meaning in this world, then where does one find it? Now, I really shouldn't do this, because there's 12 chapters to Ezekiel, and I mean, Ezekiel just has many more. Ecclesiastes has 12 chapters. Yeah. And I really should wait until we get to the end, but I'm going to give you a plot spoiler right now to make this a little more comfortable and put you at ease. All the way at the end, we read this in chapter 12, verse 13. Now all has been heard, and here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. See, meaning is found outside, not in. There must be something outside our natural system, this under the sun thing that he talks about, that can give purpose to life and can deliver hope. Meaning to your life is not found in the finite parts of this world. It's not found in your boyfriend or your girlfriend or your spouse, your children, your education, your vocation, your success and power, what's in your bank account, your celebrity status, what sports teams you like. It's not found in any of that. Rather, a meaning that lasts forever, a meaning that transcends the things of this world, is found only in one, and that is God. There is a God who is eternal, a God who's not under the sun, but one who created the sun. This God shows the mess and chaos of this world to redeem it, to redeem us, to provide purpose where there was none, to provide healing to the broken, restoration to the divorced, and joy to the hurting, protection to the abused, and find it there, or we can choose to find it from a source outside the world. So let's look at two thoughts after day after day. But there is nothing new under the sun. So our only hope must be above it, right? We know, for instance, in the Titanic. Now, I don't know if you knew how many were on board, but men, women, children, passengers, crew, there were 2,224 aboard the ship on that fateful day when it went down. I believe it, yes, April 15th in 1912. And on that day, some of them were rich. Well, actually, many of them were rich if they could be on the Titanic at that in that age. But many of them had different power sources and all these things. They were all different. But on that date, everyone fell into just two camps. Those who were saved and those who were not. On that day, 704 were saved. 1,519 were lost. And we know that after this life, there's another one. And we can make a choice in this life, too, of where we'll spend it. There are only two choices, just like with the Titanic, the choice of being saved or the choice of being lost. The second thing we notice is that life will become a heavy burden if we try to live it without God. Many people have sought the meaning and purpose in life and come up wanting. People wiser and more creative and more talented than you or I. H.G. Wells, he was a famous historian, said at 61, "I have no peace, all life is at the end of the tether." The poet Byron said, "My days are in yellow leaf, the flowers and fruits of life are gone, the worm and the canker and the grief are mine alone." The literary genius Thoreau said, "Most men live lives of quiet desperation." Ernest Hemingway, with the age of 61, having have all the wine and women and song and a distinguished literary career, committed suicide. And he left a note behind that said, "Life is one darn thing after another." Ralph Barton, who in his time was the top political and cultural cartoonist of his day, left this note pinned to his pillow before taking his own life. "I have had few difficulties, many friends, great successes. I have gone from wife to wife, from house to house, visited great countries of the world, but I am fed up with inventing devices to fill up 24 hours of the day." Fed up, pursuing the meaningless. And as we've read so far, the teacher was fed up with life under the sun. If a man who had everything, investigated everything visible, and did not find meaning to life, then the one thing that is needed must be invisible. Everything within this world is meaningless. The pleasure it provides, the materialism it provides, the intellectualism it provides, it's all empty. Your sports, your education, your job, your family, it's all empty. And so we must search and find our meaning for our days under the sun in the one who is above the sun, the one who created the sun itself. So my question for you, my question for myself, are we investing in things that will be later found in a dump somewhere? Look at your time, look at your budget, look at your checkbook, and see the source of your meaning, the source of your purpose and your dignity, your identity. I love God. I love that He provides hope to the hurting and comfort to the grieving, justice to the evil and salvation to His children, and that God provides meaning to the world. Again, meaning and purpose is found outside this world, not in it. Let us pray.